Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Yo ho ho, ridiculous historians. I'm sorry, I just had to get it out of my system. All right, well, I'm Ben. This is part two of our exploration of the little known story of Jamaica and Jewish pirates.
Hi, I'm Noel. Ben, was that just a drawn out yo, or were those meant to be ho ho ho's in between as a piratey ref?
Yeah, piratey ref. Did it sound like a yo or a yo ho ho?
I just was making sure that we're on the Zoom, and then I was a little bit, it dragged it out, did that thing where it digitally kind of stretched it. So on my end, it just kind of sounded like you were saying, yo, ridiculous historians, and welcome to the show. But no, I kid. But yeah, today, you know, we did this intentional two-parter, and I know the first one seemed a little on the short side, but we felt like it was a good kind of primer to now get you into some like really cool dives into some of the most notable Jewish pirates and privateers from throughout history. So what do you say we jump right in with Simon Reyes, a.k.a. the Great Jew?
Yes, let's walk the plank of the podcast with the help of our super producer, Casey Pegram. No doubt brandishing a scimitar behind us, forcing us along. You're right. This guy was known as the Great Jew. Also, as we go through this episode, please, if you're playing along at home, let us know what your ideal pirate nickname would be. I think that's the coolest thing. If you're a pirate, you get a nickname, right? We've talked about cool professional nicknames in the past. But Reyes had the moniker, the Great Jew. He and his family, like so many of the people we mentioned in part one of the show, they fled the Spanish Inquisition in the early 1500s. And first, they went to Turkey. And then it was in modern-day Izmir, Turkey, where Sinan became the right-hand man of a fellow named Hayreddin Barbarossa, one of the most famed pirates of all time. Barbarossa would eventually go on to become a sultan and a commander in the Ottoman Navy, and these guys had their own interesting take on the pirate flag.
They sure did. And just one quick little snippet of backstory on Sinan. He was born to Sephardic Jewish parents who fled Spain and then, located into the Ottoman Empire. But I thought the distinction of Sephardic Jews was interesting because I wasn't intimately familiar with this tradition. And it specifically refers to descendants of Jews who lived in Spain and Portugal from the later centuries of the Roman Empire until they were essentially forced out of those countries in the last decades of the 15th century. And that's from Britannica there, just to give credit where credit is due. But this is something I wasn't intimately familiar with. So always interesting to learn about new kind of cultural offshoots. But yes, to your point, Ben, about their kind of interesting spin on the Jolly Roger, which we heard from you last episode, did have some variations. Theirs had a six-sided star, very much seeming to be a reference to the Jewish Star of David in place of that smiling skeleton boy.
And they were a dynamic duo on the high seas. Probably their biggest victory came in 1538 during something called the Battle of Preveza, right off the coast of Greece. Ottoman forces, led by these two guys, defeated an entire flotilla of armed ships from Christian countries that had been kind of assembled or justice leagued by Pope Paul III. This victory of theirs ensured that the Ottoman forces would dominate the Mediterranean for generations to come. And this is where Sinan earned his nickname, his street name, the Great Jew. You know who gave it to him? His enemies on the Spanish side of the conflict.
Totally. Yeah, it makes me think of the character in Inglourious Basterds, the one with the baseball bat, you know, who's bashing in heads all the time. He gets his nickname from his enemies, too. It was the Bear Jew, right? Because he was known for bashing heads. So you always know if you get a pretty cool sounding nickname from your enemies, you're doing something right. You're striking fear into the right hearts. You know what I mean?
I still think that, you know, the Spanish forces at this point were like, why not throw in some hate speech? Yeah, while we're here, let's just also be insulted. I don't know what they, you know what I mean? I don't know how they meant it to be received. But I agree with you. It is a very badass nickname. People were so intimidated by this guy or looked up to him, depending on where they stood in the conflict, that they began spreading rumors of his sorcerous powers. He was so good at navigating the seas that people started saying he had to use magic to do it. They were like, there's only one way. I love picturing this conversation. It's a bunch of other sailors meeting up and they're like, look, guys, we know we're just mainly winging it out there. How does Sinan know where he's going all the time? And someone else said, I think it's magic, bro. And they were like, yeah, because that was a sufficient explanation of things at the time.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, wasn't part of that kind of anti-Semitic attitude and almost fear of Jews as having some kind of being like witches or something, or as possessing some kind of magical powers? You often hear kind of outdated jokes about, I mean, even in like, you know, the that fantastic film Jojo Rabbit by Taika Waititi, there's a character, I don't want to spoil anything about the movie, but there's a child who refers to Jews as being like having the ability to hypnotize you or something like that, like vampire rules or whatever. And I think that sort of attitude about like they're using witchcraft to do this navigation was probably a pretty widespread idea.
Mm-hmm. And another way to further dehumanize people when you really think it all the way through. So, interestingly enough, you can read more about Barbarossa and Sinan's adventures in the 5-volume book of Barbarossa's memoirs that he dictated to Sinan. They currently reside in the Istanbul University Library. So, this guy's having an adventure that most people don't know about, which is crazy. I would love to see the film, which I know I've been saying in like every episode we do, but so many of these stories are just perfect. They're so cinematic. Okay, we can't spend all our time on this guy, though. What say we move on to another great nickname, the Pirate Rabbi?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Samuel Palash or Palaszczuk. I'm going to go with Palash. What do you think? We're probably going to get corrected either way. Let's just stick with it. Yeah, this guy wasn't just your run-of-the-mill son of Abraham. He was actually a rabbi. His name was Rabbi Shmuel Palachi, and he is said to have taken part in some pretty serious pirate raids against Spanish and Dutch ships, which would have been under the privateer side. Isn't that right, Ben?
Yeah. He was working for the Dutch government, and then he was also working for the Sultan of Barbary in Morocco. He was instrumental in one of the very first treaties between European and Middle Eastern powers. That's the 1610 agreement that guaranteed peace between Morocco and the Netherlands. So despite the fact that he had trained as a rabbi, he obviously felt more called to this life on the high seas as a privateer, but he was still a man of faith. He was still pious, and one of the rules on his ship was that the members of the crew had to donate a tenth of their loot, I'll just say a cut of their booty, to charity.
Yeah! Lean into it, dude. I love it.
And he also kept things kosher on his ship, which, if you think about that, that seems like at some point it could get a little tough, right?
Yeah. Keep things kosher. I mean, it takes a lot of effort. And certainly you don't have the luxury of having access to like all the things when you're, far, far away at sea. But yeah, that whole aspect of like donating to charity, that's the real kicker for me. That's fantastic. So in 1614, Morocco and Spain went to war with each other, and Pallash was responsible for heading up a small Moroccan fleet that was destined for a conflict with Spanish ships, and actually was able to be successful and capture them. He was, though, arrested by the Spanish ambassador and then tried under Spanish law for piracy. There's a letter to a Dudley Carleton, who was the British ambassador to Venice then, and he summed up the life of this Jewish pirate thusly. And this comes from AISH.com. I'm not familiar with the word, so forgive me if I'd rather spell it than mispronounce it, which is a really great resource for Jewish culture and heritage and all kinds of history and cool storytelling. Highly recommend it. But eight little known facts about Jewish pirates. And they have this quote from Dudley Carleton. And keep in mind that maybe some of this language might sound a little charged. I'm just reading it from the historical record. Quote, "Here is a Jew pirate arrested that brought three prizes of Spaniards into Plymouth. He shall likely pass out of here well enough, for he has league and license under the king's hand for his free egress and regress, which was not believed until he made proof of it."
Okay, yeah, so eventually they realized he is approved by the highest authority to basically do what he wants, right? It's imagine, we talk about it sometimes in spy novels, right? The idea of a license to kill. But imagine if there was a country where you literally got a printed letter that you could whip out that says something like, super producer Casey Pegram has the express authorization of the U.S. government to do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. Let him go.
Yep.
I would love that. I would probably get into some really poorly thought out hijinks. You know what I mean? Pallash was acquitted. He was set free. When he passed away in 1616, he was given a hero's funeral. Every single member of the Jewish community in Amsterdam got together and marched in his funeral procession, and they were not alone. They were joined by royalty, and they were joined by elders of the city itself. So this person had an immense amount of support and recognition in his time.
Yeah, for sure. And like we said, bust another myth about pirates. I mean, this guy seemed like a pretty benevolent pirate at the end of the day, and had a bit of a moral code, which I appreciate, because you think of pirates as just, being wanton and not following the rules. And this guy was definitely a different spin on that. All right, let's move on to another amazing nickname. Not a nickname, but like a gang name. This one's about Subotol and the Brotherhood of the Black Flag.
Which sounds like definitely a Black Flag tribute band, right?
Mm-hmm, totally.
I'm not alone in that. Okay.
No.
So this guy was a Jewish physician living in the 16th century, an educated man. And he was an explorer of what would now be known as the Americas. He's also credited by some with introducing the potato to Europeans, which, nice one, man. I've been thinking about this during quarantine. You know what I miss? I miss having fries, French fries, that I didn't cook.
Yeah, so you haven't really been doing much. You haven't done like a drive-through? You haven't been to a Chick-fil-A or any of that?
Yeah, I went to a drive-through once, but usually I've been staying in and cooking. It's a little healthier. It's something to do. I've been cooking some weird stuff, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. And you were talking about you're going to have a seafood extravaganza with your little Japanese grill after we get done recording. And I think you've inspired me to go a seafood route myself for dinner. I got my mom visiting. But, well, speaking of the sea and food, we were talking about potatoes a minute ago. And now we're talking back about Subotol and the Brotherhood of the Black Flag. He formed a bond, something of an alliance with another famous explorer's son, who realized as well that the profession of piracy was a pretty good racket. And that was the son of Sir Francis Drake, Henry. So the two became inseparable, and they started this organization, if you want to call it that, known as the Brotherhood of the Black Flag. It was absolutely a band of pirates that was hell-bent on attacking as many Spanish ships as they could right off of the coast of a place that I think you went very recently, Ben, modern-day Chile.
Yeah, that's right. They are said to have buried 6,000 pounds of Spanish gold and an even larger amount of silver near a harbor in Chile. At this time, no one has found that buried treasure. However, treasure hunters have found some documents that were partially written in Hebrew that they believe may have been written by Subotol himself. So, it is quite possible that someone off the coast of Chile may one day find the hidden treasure of the Brotherhood of the Black Flag.
Absolutely, Ben. And just for reference, if you wanted to check out this area in Chile today, if you ever find yourself back on a plane, or maybe you live there, it is near the Guayacan Harbor today. And that's spelled G-U-A-Y-A-C-A-N. I think Guayacan is probably a decent pronunciation there, but let us know.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com. Where America goes to hire.
Who do we have next, Ben?
Here we go. We've been setting up for this. We talked about heist, talked about pirates. Now we're talking about a pirate heist. It comes to us courtesy of Moshe Cohen Hanarkis, or Moses Cohen Enriquez, depending on where you go with the translation. He was one of the most famous of the revenge-seeking Jewish privateers and pirates. He started his life living in secrecy as a Jewish person because he grew up under the Inquisition in Portugal. He was, at a time, one of the most well-known, prominent, successful merchants in the capital of Portugal, Lisbon. And then he was discovered to be Jewish and to be practicing his faith in 1605. He and 150 other people were publicly tortured, and this changed Cohen's life. He decided that he was going to work against Spain and Portugal and fight against the injustices of the Inquisition. First, he had to escape.
Yeah, that'll certainly do it. And he did that thing. He got out of Amsterdam, and he pretty quickly seemed to find his way into the good graces of the Dutch. And he became essentially a spy for them, for the Dutch Navy. And he settled in Jamaica, which was already starting to become this kind of safe haven for these Jewish expats. And he worked with the Dutch on behalf of the Netherlands to attack these Spanish vessels and just kind of be a thorn in the side of these colonial ambitions to take over the New World. Because everyone was vying for a lot of that real estate, right?
Yeah, that's right. This is part of a massive land and resource grab on the part of the European powers. Cohen even teams up with one of the most feared pirates of the day, a man named Sir Henry Morgan. And Sir Henry Morgan is a dangerous, dangerous dude, right? But this land grab, this age of expansion panic that so many European powers are going through, makes them bend the rules a little bit more. And so the Dutch and British governments actually, they're not very loud about it, but they back up Cohen and Henry Morgan.
Would that be Captain Henry Morgan of the rum fame?
The Lieutenant Governor of Jamaica?
Yeah. No, so remember, you know, Captain Morgan's? Surely it's named after him, right?
Yeah. I mean, one would imagine Captain Morgan was a Sir Henry Morgan, I guess, is a Welsh privateer, and he was a plantation owner who eventually became the lieutenant governor of Jamaica. So he was in the halls of power, but to be clear, what I'm talking about when I say the quiet support is the Dutch and British governments quietly supporting Cohen in his partnership. Sir Henry Morgan was already kind of like above reproach in a lot of ways because he was so powerful.
And just for the record, confirmed, Captain Morgan Rum is named after Sir Henry Morgan for his adventures in the Caribbean.
True. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to me, right? Mm-hmm.
Drink responsibly, and you too can live like the captain.
You know, I wonder why they never had a tagline like, promote yourself, or even use that I'm the captain now meme. That would be great.
That would be good. You know what I was thinking in my mind? I was confusing the Captain Morgan's tagline with the Captain Crunch tagline, which I think is superior, is you and the captain make it happen.
Oh, there we go. Again, drink responsibly.
And eat your sugary cereals responsibly, kids.
Right. Eat your breakfast candy responsibly. That still baffles me. So here, let's fast forward to the heist. We promised you a heist. There is a heist involved. In 1628, Cohen helps the Dutch West India Company pull one of the most profitable sea heists in the entire history of piracy. They steal like over $1 billion worth of gold and silver from a Spanish fleet off the coast of Cuba. And when we say a billion, that's us roughly adjusting for how much this gold and silver would be worth in today's age. But it's still kind of tough to get a super accurate calculation there. Just, it was a lot of money.
But wait a minute, Ben. I thought the Dutch West India Company was a legitimate business. What are they doing pulling off heists?
The Dutch West India Company. Well, specifically, Cohen helped Admiral Piet Hein. And so if we're going to be all unfun and factual about it, the Dutch West India Company was probably not officially sanctioning this heist. But without doing a whole episode about them yet, I wouldn't put it past them, man. They are a very bad group.
Oh, but no. There's a thing, if you just look up Dutch West India, in Britannica, Dutch West India Company, it says, using booty acquired from the capture by the Dutch seaman Piet Hein of part of a Spanish treasure fleet, the company challenged the Portuguese hold on Brazil beginning in 1630 and attained its greatest success during the administration of Count John Maurice. So they definitely were in on it.
And they're definitely sanctioning it. Yeah, we should do at some point a story about some of the many crimes of those organizations, because even if you know a lot about them, you might not know the whole terrible story. So not long after successfully pulling off this massive sea heist, Cohen starts his own pirate island, because off the coast of Brazil, which you mentioned earlier, and then once Portugal takes over the area, Cohen becomes this advisor to Captain Henry Morgan. Drink responsibly.
Indeed. And then, you know, Cohen does finally kind of retire, I guess. He's getting up there in years. Sir Henry Morgan becomes the lieutenant governor of Jamaica and actually pardoned Cohen. So Cohen was living in the clear, and he stayed in Jamaica until he passed away, living the life of a civilian, you know, but having had some hella adventures. The pirate's life was certainly for him, but he knew when to say when, just like you should when you're drinking Captain Morgan's rum.
That's right, and that's a lovely pirate stereotype to bust. Not all pirates died on the high seas in, you know, a wave of treasure and blood falling to cannon fire. Some people were actually able to retire, which I thought was pretty cool. And now I think we have time for one more. Someone who's been called, occasionally, the most famous Jewish pirate, Jean Lafitte. He was born in France in about 1780.
I had no idea Jean Lafitte was a Jewish pirate. Certainly heard of him from Lafitte's blacksmith shop in New Orleans, which I believe is the oldest bar still in operation there, or possibly in the United States. It's been around for a very, very long time. And it's a pretty fun little dive bar to check out. They have really good hurricanes. But yeah, Jean Lafitte was born in France in about 1780, like you said. And there is a pretty controversial work called The Journal of Jean Lafitte. Controversial in it may or may not have been written by him. Or it could be some kind of forgery. It could have been written by a third party. He does claim that his mother's father was a Spanish Jew who was subjected to torture under the Inquisition. And much like some of the previous entries in this list, seeing that happen to his family created a lifelong hatred for Spain and for, obviously, the Spanish Inquisition, and decided that he wanted to wreck their shop, man. Like, just absolutely be another thorn in the side of the Spanish Armada, right? So he wanted to mess with their money because they had these holdings in the New World, and that's where the Inquisition was absolutely, like, burning their way across the land.
So Jean moves to New Orleans to escape the Inquisition. He doesn't move alone. He brings his brother Pierre, and together they found a blacksmith shop, and they do pretty well. But there's a conspiracy afoot because they have a second secret profession. They have commissions from the Republic of Cartagena to intercept Spanish boats. So while they're operating their blacksmith shop, they carry on this secluded interdiction career from a secluded colony in Barataria Bay off the coast of New Orleans. That's cool. Secret pirates.
It is super cool. And from that same article from jpost.com, Jewish Pirates of the Caribbean, they have a really great quote from a professor by the name of Edward Bernard Glick, who wrote an article called Lafitte's Jewish Origins in the Jerusalem Post back in 2006. And he says Lafitte was also a Sephardic Jew, along with his first wife. And Glick points out that not only did Lafitte run a single pirate ship, he had a whole fleet of them that he kind of ran like a mob boss almost from his blacksmith shop, which also was a site for fencing stolen pirate loot.
That's my favorite part, by the way. You know, you come for the horseshoes and then you stay for the emeralds, right? Or maybe like a cursed skull. I don't know. I don't know what kind of stuff they're fencing in this pirate shop.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin? I know
it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So years before the Battle of New Orleans and before the War of 1812, he's already got beef with the authorities, and there's this very strange flex, a weird flex that he does. I bet Miles and Jack would love this. The Louisiana governor, William C.C. Claiborne, places a reward of $500 on Lafitte's head. And what does he do? He retaliates by putting a $5,000 bounty on the head of the governor. He's telling the governor of Louisiana, stop playing with broke boy rules. You know what I mean?
Seriously. Holy cow. I wouldn't say that's a weird flex as much as it's just a power move of epic proportions. We know where this guy stands. But then in the War of 1812, Lafitte, in his capacity as a spy, actually warned American troops of the British invasion, but not like the Beatles one. This is like, you know, a military invasion. And he offered to help out Andrew Jackson, who was the general defending New Orleans at the time, with some of his top guys from his pirate crew.
Yep. And he said, we'll do this. We'll help you out, Andy, which I'm sure he called Andrew Jackson Andy, right? He said, we'll help you out, Andy. All you have to do is give us a full pardon for anything we ever may have or may have not done. Deal? And Andy says, yeah, deal. The pirate gang does a great job.
Jackson, in fact, later in life, Jackson goes on to call Lafitte one of the ablest men of the Battle of New Orleans. So it sounds like he earned that pardon.
100%. And, you know, he takes it easy for a little while, but a couple of years after this massive, you know, hero moment, he starts back up into pirating, piracy. I'm going to go with pirating. It's just fun to say. But he moves shop to Galveston, Texas, and brings close to 1,000 buccaneers along with him. And he established like a pirate community that he referred to as his kingdom, named Campeche on the barrier island of Galveston, which is a thing. It's on the Gulf Coast. I didn't realize Galveston was an island. And they lived under the rule of, at the time, the Nueva España colony of Mexico. And he partnered up with a Portuguese Jew by the name of João de la Porta. And some of their biggest named, heist buds were folks like Jim Bowie of the Alamo fame, also known for the knife that was named after him.
So until he passed away in 1825, Jean Lafitte remained one of the most feared pirates of the Spanish Main. And the Spanish Main is the eastern coast of Spain's possessions in the New World at this time. You can see traces of his story everywhere in New Orleans. There's a national park named after him. The author we mentioned in part one of this series even posits that this man was the inspiration for Johnny Depp in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. But I still feel like the inspiration is that guy from the Rolling Stones, not Keith Stewart. Keith Stewart is a guy I went to high school with. And if you're hearing this, Keith, I hope you're well. The other Keith.
Keith Richards.
Yes.
And he played his father in one of the movies. I think that was a nod to how he definitely was. I think he's probably inspired, like maybe Lafitte was part of the historical precedent, but certainly his mannerisms were all Keith Richards.
Yeah, so maybe in that point we're talking about the creative inspiration of the screenwriters or the scriptwriters and the creative inspiration of the actors. But there you have it, folks. For a long, long time, the stories of these privateers and pirates were rarely explored in the history books. And that began to change in the last decade or so when historical graveyards were unearthed in the Caribbean that revealed, you know, the extent of the Jewish population that had gone there seeking safety from the Inquisition, and also helped us understand that several individuals in these communities were indeed pirates.
Yeah, that's right. And back in 2007, the Caribbean Volunteer Expeditions, which is a nonprofit cultural preservation society in the Caribbean, has started to take a lot of steps in compiling a lot of these research materials and artifacts and inventorying these grave sites, like you mentioned, Ben, to really shine a light on this kind of lost part of history, transcribing epitaphs and just creating a wealth of information that folks that are interested that want to find out more about the Jewish pirate community that was forced out of Spain largely due to fear of being persecuted and tortured by the absolutely horrific Spanish Inquisition.
I say this with sincerity. What an astonishing story, and how fortunate we are to be able to learn more about it in the present day. You know, I'm pretty happy that we made this two-parter.
Oh, I am too. And I did want to add one last little thing that I think is super interesting and I'd always wondered about. Because of this massive, let's not forget, like this was about Jamaica specifically, about these Jewish pirates that got their start after immigrating to Jamaica, in addition to other places. But that was sort of the big one in terms of like how much of the, parliament they made up in terms of the seats. And that has a lot to do with, it maintains a big part of the heritage of Jamaica, which you think of oftentimes intertwined with Rastafarianism. And as it turns out, the concept of Rastafarianism has a lot of connections with Judaism. Their Messiah, the Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie, was said to have been descended from King Solomon. And obviously one of their most powerful symbols in Rastafarianism is the Lion of Judah. And Rastafarians also keep kosher.
Yeah, there are so many misconceptions about Rastafarianism here in the West. It probably deserves its own episode as well. There is fascinating history there. Of course, piracy is not over. Piracy continues in different parts of the world, right? You've probably seen stories about piracy in the Middle East or off the coast of Somalia recently. But this age of piracy seems to be unique because of the way it meshed and evolved in concert with the age of maritime expansion from Europe and the one of the many waves of anti-Semitism that Europe experienced at the time. So Tricorn, hats off to you, pirates of history. I don't know. I'm in a weird spot with this because I don't want to completely condone the behaviors of these people, which at times had to be brutal and violent and bloody. But also I love the idea of fighting back against this institutional evil of the Inquisition. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And you got to give them props for their open-mindedness culturally and allowing folks that were basically cast off, if not outright, you know, hunted by certain individuals in power and bringing them into their ranks and not judging them for their heritage or any of that stuff. So that's pretty cool and very punk rock, if you ask me.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's a great way to segue into this. Noel, Casey, we would be doing a terrible job if we didn't include some of the cool parts of real life pirate code. This comes to us from Mark Mancini over at Mental Floss. Some of these rules might surprise you. So we talked about voting, mentioned voting. That's awesome. They also said you can't steal from other pirates, I guess, honor among thieves. Oddly enough, they said nobody can gamble, which feels like a weird vice to isolate, but I guess it was bad for life on the ship. Everybody had a bedtime. They had a curfew.
Oh my gosh. Lights out. Or you get a spanking.
Yeah. They also had to always be ready to tangle.
Each man must keep his piece, cutlass, and pistols at all times clean and ready for action. I just love this piece, cutlass, and pistols.
Yeah. I like how they say piece, cutlass, and pistols because you got to wonder, what's the piece?
What's the piece? I thought the piece was the pistol.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a bolo or a...
Or a side piece, maybe. Like a little one you keep in your pirate boot.
Yeah. Or like a mace or like a frisbee. I don't know. Tell us what you think the best pirate piece would be. They also said never bring your date home, right? Most of these things did not have instant fatal punishment. But if you brought a person of any sort with you for romantic purposes onto the ship, you would be put to death.
Yeah, a lot of things punishable by death or marooning, which I guess just means abandoning you on a desert island with nothing but maybe a mixtape of your favorite songs. And one last one I'd love to point to, because it is kind of progressive, is the way that Mental Floss puts it is lose a limb, get workers' comp. And here's the code. Every man who shall become a cripple or lose a limb in the service shall have 800 pieces of eight from the common stock. And for lesser hurts proportionately, and pieces of eight being a very popular and widely accepted Spanish coin that I think were even American legal tender until 1857.
What a ride. Oh, man. We busted a lot of stereotypes here, and we talked a little bit about the complex cultural situation. But still, like the 6 or 7 year old in me is so into the idea of just hopping on a boat and living life on the high seas. I don't think I would want to do it with a crew, though. I want to be like Kevin Costner in Waterworld and just have like my own thing in a system. You guys remember Waterworld? That's one of Casey's favorite films, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gene Triplehorn turned in a tour de force performance, as did Dennis Hopper. And I hear the ride at Universal's pretty cool. But wait a minute, Ben. How would you feel about like more of like a Tom Hanks and Castaway kind of situation? What would be your inanimate object that you would anthropomorphize?
That wouldn't be a computer with a satellite link. that's a good question. If you had to anthropomorphize something on a desert island, I would try to make like a really cool sculpture or something, you know, leave a mark after I'm done. As far as companionship, I'd probably see if I could befriend some of the native fauna, you know what I mean? And have like a sidekick bird or a mammal of some sort. Cause I don't know if you could befriend a fish.
Perhaps there would be corvids on this island where you wind up. I know you have a real kinship with those little guys.
What about you, Noel? What would you do to while away the lonely days on a desert island?
I'm going to go with coconut just because it's obvious, you know. You can draw a little face on it. I mean, I might not have a volleyball. Mm-hmm. Volleyball seemed good because it's like sort of, you know, squishy. You can put your head on it. Maybe a pillow, but then it would get dirty. I don't know. I'm going to stick with coconuts. Yeah.
A tiger. I want a tiger. I want to be friends with a tiger.
Be friends with a tiger that would let you ride around on his back and potentially also talk to you once you started going mad and hallucinating. And then eventually it would also probably eat you. But dare to dream is what I say about all of this stuff, as did many of these incredible piratey characters. Huge thanks to super producer Casey Pegram for being here through all of this, through this intentional two-parter, even though... God, it could have been a three-parter, man. The lengths of these are way out of whack, but what are you going to do? Got to get a vacation at some point. Huge thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme, Christopher Hasiotis, here in spirit, Jonathan Strickland, the Quizster.
Thanks to Gabe Luzia. Thanks to the authors mentioned in today's episode. Who doesn't love to learn more about pirates? Thanks, of course, to Eves Jeffcoat and a behind-the-scenes peek here, folks. This is one of the last things we're recording before some of us hit the figurative road for a week's vacation. And this was a little bit uphill. I've got some gremlins on the wings of the internet connection. So I want to thank you, Casey, and you, Noel, for bearing with me as we were sorting out some of the technical difficulties and all the various strange sounds that happened today.
All good, man. All good. It was a pleasure as always. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.